I don't even know if this exists, but I want to work with high level athletes or people that are, you know, highly motivated to like better themselves. And I want to be in an atmosphere where I can do that full time and make a decent living. And I laid all the parameters out there for myself, like verbally.
Yeah.
And sure enough, universe intervenes at that point.
I'm Jeff C. Mandel. Welcome to Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by Dustin Chadwick, and I'm going to probably butcher this. It's the Human Performance Optimization Team with the 194th, as you call it, the HPO team. He's going to talk about what they do at the 194th, how they help the airmen that are there. I think with physical fitness being incredible, probably isn't just on that. And so we'll let him explain that and kind of talk about how others can get involved. So appreciate coming on, Dustin.
Absolutely. No, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Intro and background yourself.
Yeah. So I initially get into this path. I think like a lot of coaches, I started out really young as an athlete playing sports. And at a pretty early age, there's just a couple experiences they had, not to mention like the 80s action heroes of that generation that may have brainwashed me into what was important if you wanted to be a man.
The Schwarzeneggers, the Stallones. I'm just listening to an audiobook about it right now.
Yes, the Jean-Claude Van Dammes and the Bruce Lees. And my stepdad at the time had, this is VHS era, so he had, I'm not kidding, a wall of only those movies. Oh, so wow. I had them all. That's all I watched. So it had a huge influence on me. And then pretty early on, playing soccer, we actually lived at the top of a very long hill. It's probably half mile long. And when we moved there, I could not ride my bike up that hill. I was actually kind of a really sickly kid. I was hospitalized, I think, twice a year until I was about 12 years old for pneumonia and asthma related stuff. So training and doing a little extra stuff on top of it, I noticed I had to do that just to like be at neutral with like the other kids and we'd start soccer season. And I remember when we moved there, I'd try to ride my bike up this hill and I'd have like benchmarks. Oh, I made it to the blue house today. Oh, I made it to the pink house the next day. And by the time I could just plow up that hill nonstop, my legs had like really developed for like a fifth grade kid. And I was doing that a couple times a day. And I really noticed like the instant gratification of like doing something, going through this really hard physical thing. I mean, you're tasting blood in your mouth, like climbing this hill. And I kind of got a little addicted to that and that punishment and the mental toughness that came with it. And, then I started doing other sports. I got into track and I started having like actual measuring sticks. Like, this is the time you're running now. Yeah. This is what you run at the end of the season. And that just really like struck something with me. I got this feedback and really saw myself getting better. And then I started getting a little bit exposure to a weight room at that time. We just had a few dinky things, but I was able to like get my feet wet. And then the biggest transition was when I got to high school. I'd never even watched a football game in my entire life. And I ended up trying out basically on a dare slash. I was called out by one of my dad.
Like, hey, you should play football.
My dad's friend. He goes, you should stop playing soccer and you should actually play a man sport, something like that. And that didn't sit well with me. I didn't want to play football, but I wanted less to be called out and say like I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I ended up playing football, and that really accelerated this whole strength conditioning, my mindset towards lifting and what you could do. And I still kept playing everything else, but I went from being 120 pounds maybe as a freshman in high school, graduating at 208 pounds, and all of that was just done, you know, working out a couple times a day in that weight room. And it became the passion was there and it was instilled and it became a lifestyle at that point. But it still wasn't, I didn't know what to do with it. Went to college, didn't have any intention on doing anything athletic related. I played football in college and I played lacrosse in college. So I kept playing sports, but the whole notion of being a strength conditioning coach wasn't even on my register. We actually had a strength coach at our school, and that was kind of early ages of strength conditioning. At least at the lower college level. And I didn't have a tremendous experience with him. So there was no passion ignited there, because I was like, I don't really like what that guy does. I'm still not registering. Graduate. I had a few jobs at that point. and you know, it just wasn't a thing. It wasn't clicking. I couldn't imagine sitting at a desk job for the hours that I was sitting at, and I was, because of it, I was investing heavily after work was over. I'd go to the gym and I'd train for 3 hours, and I got heavily into bodybuilding and powerlifting and competing in those two sports, and did that for a long time. And that's really where my passion was at. And I remember sitting down and having this like heart to heart with my wife, because I was just unhappy with my, you know, current situation. I was like, this isn't what I was meant to do.
Yeah.
Long term. And I remember sitting, we were laying in bed, and I just laid it out to her. And I was like, I don't know what this looks like. I don't even know if this exists, but I want to work with high level athletes or people that are, you know, highly motivated to like better themselves. And I want to be in an atmosphere where I can do that full time and make a decent living. And I laid all the parameters out there for myself, like verbally.
Yeah.
And sure enough, universe intervenes at that point. I had a friend that had went to college with, and out of the blue, he gave me a call and he said, you know, you should really think about being a strength conditioning coach. He goes, I think this is what you're supposed to do. And I was on the side of like, you know, I wanted to just get as much information I could. I wanted to progress in, you know, bodybuilding and powerlifting. And I realized that like the more information you had about programming and yeah. what other people were doing, it was super beneficial. But outside of reading books, you know, I didn't have access to any high level coaches or anything like that. So on a whim, he called me and said, you know, I can get you an internship here if you think this is something you want to do. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. And I still had no intentions of being a strength coach. I just wanted the information. I was just a servant to the game, and I wanted to get better at it. And I really didn't know what I was signing up for. And at that point, he gave me a number. I called the guy. It was Texas Christian University.
Okay.
And I remember, I don't know if this is before or after, but there's 10 kind of internship candidates at that time that were in the mix. And after the fact, the guy that ended up hiring me, he told me, you were number 10 out of the 10. He goes, I had no intent on offering you any position at all. And I pretty quickly realized why. The path that most people take to like get into that space, they're doing internships already.
Yeah.
They were doing that in school. They already had their undergrad. They'd probably already taken their strength conditioning coach test. They'd done all the stuff that I didn't even know was on the radar. I didn't know you had to do. I didn't know the path at all. I just wanted to train people, and I wanted to train myself, and I just wanted to own the knowledge. I had no business being there. I remember the first conversation we had. I was writing stuff down because as outclassed as I was as like a freshman in high school, being a 100-pound kid trying to play with 200-pound humans, intellectually I felt the same way when I got into that room with that with Zach DeCant, the first real coach that I was with. And I was like, I need to get a lot smarter, a lot faster, because I didn't even know what questions to ask. So I spent the next couple of weeks just trying to learn terminology, because I'm not prepared for this. I could fill up ice tubs, I could work hard, I could open the building at 4 a.m, I could leave at 8:30 at night, I could do all those things. So I just completely immersed myself at that point.
It's kind of the grind, right?
Yes.
Like it's just the grind of like, hey, you're gonna be the first in the building and the last to leave.
Yeah. So I could do all those, and I fully embraced that side of it, because that I could do. That didn't take any intelligence to do that stuff. That just took grit and hard work, and that's where I wanted to be. And I basically had sold all my possessions at that point too, because that's an unpaid, you know, opportunity.
Unpaid.
Yeah, for basically close to a year. And I sold my truck, moved down there on a whim, and just went to work. And it quickly evolved into something that I didn't recognize it was gonna be. So I was there for not long before I got offered an internship. Once again, didn't know that was part of the process. I remember going into his office, he goes, do you want a graduate assistant spot? I said, absolutely, I want a graduate assistant spot. Little did I know, I had no idea what that meant.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was signing up for. I had no idea where I was going. And I'd already basically committed to going to a university and pursuing a master's degree. And I had no clue what I had just signed up for. So it was kind of I just kind of played yes man. I just went with everything that was offered to me. From that point until I finished that internship, I just absorbed as much as I could. I worked heavily with the baseball team, and that was the first team that I worked with when I got to Northwestern State. and then really just ran the gauntlet there. Was in the graduate program. About 18 months later, I got offered the assistant coach spot there. And then about 18 months to the day after that, I got offered the director spot when my, basically my boss left, and just had a great time. That's when I really learned to be a coach. I took all that knowledge. It was just packed in there. And then there is where I really got to start, you know, start carving the sculpture that was going to be me and my career and what it was going to look like. And
what was your undergrad? What was the thing that?
Yeah. So I was a fine art major. So,
I could
do an oil painting for you, but, it was funny that kind of played into the bodybuilding stuff. You know, I had an artistic eye for that. And I liked that side of the training, but yeah, not in that background. I was an athlete and I was writing programs for people. I was doing that stuff, but that was hobby work. It wasn't really what I was pursuing. So I did some graphic design work after that and just realized like I couldn't sit in a chair and grind at a computer doing that for as many hours as I was doing. I still love it and have a passion for that, but I have limited windows where I can put that out there. So after that, my wife got pregnant and I wanted to kind of shift gears. Working 6-7 days a week in that college environment wasn't conducive to the kind of father that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And had a pretty big decision to make. I'd taken a position in Texas at that time that it was kind of a high risk, high reward. I would either have a job at the end of this little internship or I would have nothing. And I ended up getting the best of both worlds, kind of. They had no position, but the guy liked me so much that he created a position doing some artwork and remodeling a thing for him. And he goes, a coaching spot will eventually open up. You were a great coach. I want to keep you here. So I thought about that for a while, but we ended up choosing a support system over that job and kind of where I'd built my my network and my connections. Moved back home to Washington, because this is where I'm from. And I poked around different places, popped my head in places, and tried to figure out what I could make happen. Well, I shouldn't say that. I took about a month off, the first true month of vacation that I ever had in my life when I came back here, and did all the things I'd missed. I went in the mountains, went hiking, mountain biking, did all the stuff I'd been missing. And then I started plotting out a new plan and kind of started reworking and reinventing what I was going to do and what it was going to look like here and what that career would look like. So, ended up working in the private sector. I ran a private training facility up, near Bangor and had a great time. And that was kind of my first introduction to like the military population. Worked with a lot of Navy out of that facility and then, athletes as well. And really enjoyed that. And I had full control over everything that was happening. So I really liked that. And I was able to make something really cool in that environment. And had a great time. Say midway through that was when the Army started kind of creating this grassroots H2F program. And I kind of got on board with that early on. And I was working those two jobs simultaneously because the big Army adopting strength conditioning was a kind of a new thing. And it was still
came with the ACFT changeover.
Yep. We were switching that test and the incorporation of civilian coaches. This is all brand new. So we didn't know it was going to happen, and being a little bit reluctant to drop everything that I had built, I was just kind of doing both because most of that was taking part in the morning. And I was actually filling in for a coach that was on maternity leave. So I got to get my toes wet, figure out what's going on, kind of learn the landscape. And there was a lot of pieces of that I really liked. And I thought there's this, you know, real opportunity for growth in the tactical sector now.
Yeah.
But had a good experience there, and I just thought there was a ton of potential. And I was now working with a demographic that really aligned with who I was as a person, and a lot of just a lot of how my raising. I had a lot of shared experiences with the soldiers that I was working with.
Yeah.
We came from very similar walks of life, and it felt like the right environment for me. So I ended up, once again, kind of running the gauntlet in the H2F program until I was the site lead over all JBLM.
Yeah.
And at that point, it kind of turns a little bit more into managing the coaches as opposed to training soldiers at that point. And I knew, like, I've always wanted to be like a floor coach. I want to work with people. I want to be the one putting my hands on people. And the initial contract we were under, there was a transition period. I also had twins on the way. So,
so at this point, you're like, great.
Yes, the timeline lined up perfect. So we had a transition there. I ended up taking a whole year off just to raise my twins for the first year. And then once again, divine intervention to the day. I think to the day, a year later, I got a call from a previous contractor, and they offered me a position working on the Air Force side. And totally different thing. I was working with operators, pretty much all TACPs, and it was just with the 116th, and didn't know what it was going to look like. I wasn't quite looking for a job at that point, but everything sounded like what I wanted, and you know, I've had pretty good luck just saying yes and going with it if that's what's being delivered. I just rolled with it, and I kind of started with the anticipation that this might not be what I want. It wasn't the best timing, but if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And sure enough, it was definitely meant to be. I was immediately like, this is my realm. These are my people. This is what I was supposed to be doing. And it took a while to kind of grow that program, because there'd been no, as far as I know, I think that was the first Air Guard strength conditioning program. Yeah. So once again, it was kind of like, you determine what right looks like, and what a program in this environment's going to, you know, a successful program's going to be in this environment. And we have kind of a, not even a split. We're heavily weighted on DSGs versus, you know, full-time staff. I'm sure that's kind of the whole thing on the entire Camp Murray, but finding a way to blend what I had done in all these environments is what we really had to do. So I get it. I get, you know, four decent touch points with the bulk of people during drill, but the rest of the year, it's very heavy digitally. I'm sending out programs, I'm sending out videos, and just trying to provide the best stuff I can in that environment versus hands-on. So,
yeah. So, and you were saying while we were kind of talking before, no military experience.
Nope. Everyone that raised me had military experience. Both grandfathers were in the military, Navy, and grandpa was a pilot. Actually, that was the first time I came here, was to pick my grandpa up.
Oh, very cool.
On the airfield.
Oh, very
cool.
As
a little kid, got to go on the tarmac. So very little. I wanted to be a pilot. Like, that was the first idea. And life kept pushing me towards strength conditioning, but I was able to kind of blend a lot of what I wanted and a lot of the ideals that I shared. And so much of training has to do with mentality, and that mentality is shared tremendously in this community as far as what we're trying to do to build people from the ground up and not just be, you know, I'm not preparing people to aesthetically look good. Yeah. I want to perform well, and I want them to be resilient. And this is the environment where those kind of characteristics are appreciated.
So, and I'm a, you know, I'm a pretty avid runner myself.
Yeah.
And of course, having a training plan is a critical thing.
Absolutely.
You're not just going to go out there and say, hey, I'm going to go run a 13.1 half marathon or a 26.2 marathon. Like, that's not going to happen unless you train and you
Absolutely.
Train constantly for it. And you kind of hit a pretty good touch point on the M-Day traditional DSG soldier or airman versus the full-timer, where the majority of the population is traditional in the Guard. How, and a lot of it's virtual, why is it so critical for them to have that training plan? Whereas full-timers, you could probably see them every day and be like, hey, here's those few things. Why is it so critical with those traditionalists?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, this goes back to the notion of like out of sight, out of mind. If you're in that environment where you're seeing people perform and it's knocking at the door, it's far easier to have that motivation because you're in that environment. When you're separated from this, and you're doing your daily job, we do have a lot of individuals that do some sort of first responder EMS. Yeah. That's a pretty common thing, but we have a lot that, don't. So they're even further removed from that lifestyle. So I try to send out things that kind of draw people back in, whether it be just a quote during the week, that kind of draws you back into like what's important and, keeps you grounded in, you know, what your purpose is, not just in your civilian life, but in your military life, because it's easy to separate from those things if you're not constantly doing it. And, you know, four drills a year, everyone's on board during that time, but it's easy for things to fizzle out. And after if you've done your PT test for the year, it's usually not in your mind, you know, the other 6 months potentially. So
you're like, I've checked that box. I don't have to worry about it for another year.
Right. So trying to keep things, you know, on people's mind, you know, so they don't, it doesn't become, the sword doesn't become dull, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's easier to do obviously with people that are full-time staff versus not.
Yeah. Now is your main focus the 116th, and kind of the TACP community?
So that was originally how the program started. Last year we hired a second coach and we expanded the program to the entire wing.
Okay.
So now we deal with everyone in the whole wing. I'm still located at the 116th. That's where my office is at. And I'm usually working with those guys in the morning, but the rest of my schedule is with wing members after that.
Yeah. Is there any thoughts to expanding that into like the Army Guard or even past the one or the 194th?
That's a good question. I think, and that's obviously that comes up in all these environments. As soon as the right set of ears hears what's going on somewhere, someone's very quick to pick it up and say, how can we have this?
Yeah.
The 141st over in Spokane, as soon as they had a conversation and knew that our unit was doing it, they're like, how do we
get involved?
That? Yep. Yeah. Everyone, as soon as something good's happening, they want to know. But there's been both in these environments. There's been really good things happening and there's been stuff that's not as good happening. So I think that's really the key thing. Setting up something, making it look right, and then trying to reproduce that as opposed to just, you know, throwing stuff out there and seeing what sticks, kind of building a curriculum and knowing what, you know, what are these important things that we need to do in this environment and, you know, using that framework to move forward before you initiate that program somewhere else. Because if it's done correctly, I think everyone should have it on some level.
And you kind of said it. You said it already, is that it's not about physically looking good. It also has a lot to do with resiliency and how you mentally get through that. And I think that's always a key piece, right? You could do, you know, up to a certain point and then you're just kind of stuck.
Yes.
So how do you break through that, I think, is a huge part of it. So what are those techniques you're utilizing that kind of help like break through that barrier that they have?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You can really get into the weeds with that one too, because depending on what quality you're trying to train, you know, you were talking about running, it depends where, you know, depends on the starting point of who you're dealing with. And that's kind of a big selling point for me with our program that I think I've implemented differently than other ones. I individualize everything. It's more work on my end to do that, but the highest version of training for anyone, it's going to be individualized. Yeah. Everyone's kind of bringing something different to the table, and it's not even the starting point. It's oftentimes injuries, your experience with other things, like did you play sports? I can use all these reference points to kind of get a really good idea of where you should be and what's going to work well for you, along with just timing, what you like to do. And there's so many personal preferences that people have. And, you know, if we're not training in a group environment where you kind of have to do a standardized thing, I'm going to cater to like your lifestyle. If you got guaranteed 3 days a week that you can commit to an hour of training, that's how I'm going to set you up. I'm not going to give you a 5 day program if you tell me you only have three. So I really try to give people exactly what they want. And then I put it on myself to know what you need more than you do, because that's where the expertise portion comes into play. But there's a variety of things I use depending on what quality we're trying to break through, whether it be, you know, whether it be just like a body weight issue and it's a nutritionally based thing, whether it be a strength based thing. And we just need to go back to, you know, maybe a technique that you haven't tried. Maybe you've been doing five sets of five for a year straight. We just need to do something different. And introducing just a new pattern or a new scheme or, you know, time under tension. There's so many techniques we can use from our lane that can, you know, bust through a plateau and have you start getting results again, whatever it might be that you're stuck on. So there's a lot we can do.
Yeah. And so I always think, right, as a battalion commander at the moment, when you have soldiers that are, you know, struggling with PT in some way, whether it's because of an injury, because of a mental block or something, what's that like what's that thing that you believe is kind of holding them back? Is it just that fear of that little bit of push that's going to push them into that next level?
That's a really good question.
I always think, and I equate this to running, right? As somebody who runs, is for me it's a no fail. 20-mile run or on a 26-mile run, a 20 miles is my point. And okay. I'm like, how do I get past that? And it's just, you gotta. Like, yep. you're at a point you just have to now.
Yep. The 22-year-old coach in me would have said something totally different than I said now. But it's with all this stuff, it's kind of the same answer. You're really only looking for just these minute increases. I'm not expecting you to put, 50 more pounds on the bar or 50 more miles on your body. Yeah. It's these little tiny minute achievements that you're shooting for, especially if you've accomplished anything. If you're a good runner or you're really strong or whatever it might be, you have kind of less potential to cover at that point. So you have to be more specific and you kind of have to go at it with a scalpel and it's modest increases and stuff. That's really what we're shooting for. We're not shooting to run, if you just break the 20, you go 20 and a half. That's all we're looking for. In that case, oftentimes it's not more mileage. There's a lot of, one of the things that I've tried to break in the mantra of all these military settings is more is better. This is what we've been doing. If we want to get better at it, we just need to put on more. That's borderline the definition of insanity. Yes. It's more going back and looking at what have we done and where did it get us? We got this far with this. Let's try adding another technique. If you've been putting on 20 miles, I wouldn't say let's do, another 20 miles of the exact same type of running. I'd say let's do some shorter distance at a faster pace,
stuff like that.
Yep. Let's do some more interval based stuff. So let's add something else to your athletic profile, so to speak, that, where's the weak link there? You might have a huge gas tank. You can cover a ton of ground, but you might not be able to put out a lot of power. Your all out speed might not be there. So we're going to try to cover ground where you have it.
And you guys are not, it might be, now correct me if I'm wrong, are you guys focused on the nutrition side of it as well with HPO? Or
so we don't have a designated dietitian like the HUS program. I do a lot of that from the nutrition side, so I'm pretty well versed in that background. That's what I spend a lot of time doing, but I'm not a registered dietitian. But I'm the one that provides kind of all the guidance in that realm, and with most people's needs, if not all of them, I haven't ran into any roadblocks that's like, I don't know how to get you from A to B. It's all pretty straightforward. And a lot of it's, once you've provided someone with kind of the baseline knowledge of what they're looking at and what they've done, you can kind of put it in their hands at that point. And then it just becomes a matter of, just self-determination and if they can do it at that point on their own.
So for somebody who, obviously your family has that service background and now you're kind of providing that service to service members, what's that feeling of being able to give back to this community?
That's a huge portion that I really love and I think about constantly. I think of all our airmen. They're serving the country. That's what I want to be. I'm the person in service to them and the person that they get to rely on, because that doesn't really exist in that environment. It's kind of a one-way street. Yeah. Everyone's providing their service to the country, and where's the service being provided to them? So I really think of myself as the servant serving them. And I wear that as much pride as I can. And I try not to ever, I've never allowed myself to get in a place where I hold myself in such high regard that I don't go out and still take out the garbage and sweep stuff and do that stuff. I think that's really critical that you don't lose that. And I think it helps keep me grounded, and I like being in that position of service, and it feels like I get the best of both worlds in that regard.
I think also the grind, right? The grind also helps. The fact that you grinded your way to get to this point and continued to go there. So
yes.
Any kind of advice as we kind of close that you'd give service members or?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm actually headed out to go put up some new flyers, because we've kind of redone our training times as far as we've now kind of tried to offer two windows. I know with our now changing schedule of a 5-day work week, we've had to adjust a few things, and we've got a lot more people that want to train after our traditional hours. So we've kind of made some tweaks to that. We have two windows that we're offering for training after 4:30, I think, from four. I'll double check. I'm going to post some flyers up around the main key points on Camp Murray. But you can always reach out to us. My email is DustinChadwick@durohealth.com. I can point you in the right direction. Usually I like to set up like an in-face one-on-one if I have the chance. If not, we can do stuff virtually. But there's a lot of ways we can skin that cat so I can get everyone what they need. And we can kind of go from there. But no, I appreciate everyone that's reached out and tried to help move this program forward, because we've done a really great job kind of building the foundation.
We lose battery
for this unit. So
okay, good.
We're in a really good spot. I just want to see it progress and get better, and kind of let us be the hallmark of what strength conditioning on the Air Force Guard side looks like.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you. Come on, man. Like I said, Jordan mentioned you and said that the program is great. He raves about it. So glad that you were able to come on and talk about your program. And
absolutely.
I think it's critical. I think being physically fit in this job is probably one of the best things. Yes. Not just being in the military, but just in general being healthy.
Absolutely. And I always say that the mind follows the body. Yeah. And, you know, and we inevitably encounter super stressful situations, whether it's, you know, duty related or life related. If you have a fit body and you're prepared to handle that stress, you're going to come out far more resilient on the other side and be able to handle so much more than the average person. Yeah. So that's what it really gives to you at the end of the day. And, you know, we can help get you there.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more, throw a question in the comments. We'll make sure to pass it on. Subscribe for future videos. And Dustin, I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.